地点在南大陆，我做开会用的在南富，我的这个中间搬到了台湾 ，and we also do this with the Tai Sun, and he was at Maryland, and he is now at the commission. So here's my brief outline. So I'll first give you our motivation of studying this system on the Honeycomb Mountains, and then so our starting point is that Honeycomb Mountains, we first get some commentary anti-paramagnetic orders, and I'm trying to explain some a coexistence of anti-paramagnetic order and superconductivity that has been that was first observed numerically in some Grassmann cancer product state population. And then I'll argue that in this system, actually the anti-paramagnetic order would enhance the superconductivity that kind of naturally explains why they coexist. And then I'll argue that there's a, so the superconducting state we get is actually a topological superconducting state. That's not too much of a surprise because of the unfairing order, the superconductivity, superconducting pairing actually has a triplet pairing component. So the interesting thing is that there's actually topological phase transition. So somewhere in the phase diagram, there's a transition from a topologically trivial superconductivity to a topologically non-trivial superconductivity. So our work is motivated by some numerical work done by Zheng Chengbu and his collaborators. So they use the Grassmann number tensor network approach to study the TJ model on the honeycomb lattice. So this is basically a version of a tensor product state. It's kind of a variational method with so it can also view it as a generalization of the mean field calculation. So this can do a very good job for if you use tensor product state, you can do a very good job on the bosonic system. And if you use Grassmann number tensor product state, you can describe a fermionic wave function with as long as the fermions are gapped, like if you have a quarter state or a superconducting state, you can describe. And so in the main panels, they're basically their benchmark results. So it's roughly showing that their variational energy is quite good comparing to DMRT studies and exact ionization. And this panel is their result. Basically, they calculated various order parameters. And so this curve is the anti-paramagnetic order. And these two curves are two different superconducting order parameters. So interestingly, they have both spin singlet pairing and spin triplet pairing here. So both of the two pairing channels have non-zero pairing order parameters. So I forgot to mention. So this axis is the doping level. So at zero doping, it's not a surprise that they get an anti-paramagnetic order state. At zero doping, you also get superconductivity. And in this doping region, there's actually a coexistence of anti-paramagnetic order and both of the two types of superconducting orders. So both spin singlet superconductivity and spin triplet superconductivity.
And both are chiral. Both are chiral in the sense one is D plus ID.
Right.
P plus ID.
Yeah, so it's fully gapped and grid, both grids are transversal and the vertex and triplet as an both have. Yeah, so honeycomb lattice model is much simpler than the real highly C material we've been talking about on the square lattice. So one interesting feature which we know of honeycomb lattice is that in the tight binding model of honeycomb lattice, we usually just solve the band structure, you get two direct nodes. So, and also the honeycomb lattice has two sublattices. It has two sides per unit cell. So it has a simple commensurate anti-paramagnetic order. So if you draw It's bipartite, so the null state has spin up in one sublattice and spin down in the other sublattice. On the square lattice, we double unit cell and break the translation symmetry. So the order vector is pi-pi, but here there's no such complication. So the order parameter, the ordering vector is simply zero. And so this anti-ferromagnetic magnetic order doesn't double the unit cell, which has an advantage that even if you have so it doesn't matter if you have an anti-ferromagnetic or not, it won't change the size of Fermi. So having the having an anti-ferromagnetic order wouldn't change the size of Fermi surface once you dope it. So if a half billion this even without any magnetic order, this thing is a semi-metal with no Fermi surface. And if you dope it, you get a small pocket. So there's no debate of large or small Fermi surface like there is on the square lattice. So we don't need any fancy large order to explain what happens.
But this is local spin, this multi regime, so local moment, there's no electrons, so that doesn't matter from the surface or not.
Yeah, so I'm just saying that
the connection is weak.
Yeah, so once there's an anti-ferromagnetic order, you can smoothly tune the states from strong coupling to weak coupling.
Yeah.
So there's, I think from the quantum Monte Carlo calculation, there's only a direct transition from semi-metal to anti-ferromagnetic. So the picture is relatively simple if you just consider the symmetry breaking orders. So we first did some simple mean field calculation about the anti-ferromagnetic order. So one possible complication we want to address is that it's obvious that if we start with the Hubbard model and if the on-site repulsion is large enough, so basically you can reduce it to a isomer model, then at half billion you get a null state and Fermi order state. Things becomes slightly complicated when you dope it, because now you have a Fermi pocket. So it's natural to ask, is the order still complementary? Or although it doesn't look like nesting, but maybe you get an incommensurate order, like some other order vectors, because now you have a Fermi momentum, could be a characteristic momentum. But we just did some simple calculation of the magnetic susceptibility. The magnetic susceptibility does show a peak at still at the commensurate momentum. So at least the simple theoretical view. We should be fine by just considering simple conventional anti-ferromagnetic order. So then we did a simple mean field calculation starting from the Hubbard model. So because we already have a so the idea is that we only did some simple mean field calculation in this work because we are motivated by some more complicated numerical work, so we don't do anything fancy about it. So just want to get some pictures. So we start with this Hubbard model, and we can do some mean field decomposition with this Hubbard interaction. And so basically the picture is that if you don't have any interaction in the semi-metal phase, you get two direct nodes from this band structure. And once you turn on anti-ferromagnetic order, you open gap at the two direct nodes. And so in the mean field, using mean field theory, we can calculate the null order parameter at different temperatures and different levels of doping. And so this black curve is the mean field order parameter at zero doping, so it's a typical dome shape. So you get there's a second order phase transition at some temperature. And once you turn on doping, you see the order parameter is suppressed. That's because the Fermi surface doesn't quite lack the doping because there's no nesting. So if you open up a gap, it moves up the Fermi pocket. So the electrons are not happy about it. So, and you see that it's kind of interesting that this suppression becomes stronger when you lower the temperature, because at higher temperature, the Fermi, or at high temperature, the Fermi surface is kind of fuzzy, so the electron doesn't care much about the environment order. But when the temperature, when you lower the temperature, they actually there is actually a clearer Fermi surface, so the spread becomes larger. So at some finite doping, we actually see a re-entrance to a parameter in the phase at lower temperature. So this is our phase diagram. So basically this solid line is, so within this solid line, within the midfield theory, we get some anti-paramagnetic order, and outside that region is paramagnetic order. So we expect that, of course, the midfield theory overestimate the order, but I think, so we expect that it will overestimate it maybe consistently. So with some fluctuations, we shrink the order region. But there's also this dashed line which separates two different regions in the anti-paramagnetic order phase. So this is because, so if you think about the Fermi levels at a finite temperature, if we start at zero temperature, you see that if we start at zero doping, so at any temperature, the Fermi surface would, the Fermi level would of course be pinned at the middle of the spectrum. So if you have an anti-paramagnetic order, you open up a gap and Fermi level is in the middle. So if you start to dope it and still at low temperature, if you start with a high temperature and dope the system, you don't actually need the Fermi surface to cross the band. You can just move the Fermi level closer to the upper band, to the bottom of the upper band, so that you get some electron occupation by thermal excitation. So in this region is where the chemical potential is actually lower than the bottom of the upper band, and in this region, the temperature is low enough. So eventually, at zero temperature, in order to get the correct number of electrons, you need the Fermi level to cross the upper band. So this dashed line is actually when the chemical potential touches the upper band. So both of the inside and outside has the same anti-paramagnetic order. So from the point of view of symmetry breaking, there is no difference. They belong to the same phase. But if you look at the electron spectrum, you see the chemical potential touches the band at the bottom. So this becomes important later on when we study the superconductivity. So now I want to give some simple argument about why there is a coexistence between both singularity and triplet. This is, if you really think about the symmetry, this doesn't look very surprising, because one interesting feature about the Hamiltonian map is that if you look at this center, this side, there's no this side center inversion symmetry on the Hamiltonian map. So normally when we talk about pairing symmetries, right, there is a, if the pairing is a singular pairing, that means the pairing wave function is anti-symmetric in the spin space. So it should be symmetric in the spatial direction. So if it's triplet pairing, that means it's symmetric in the spin subspace. So it should be anti-symmetric in the real space. But here, there's no inversion symmetry, so we can't talk about inversion parity in the real space. So there's a possible mixing between the singular pairing and triplet pairing. At least there's no distinction in the spatial symmetry representation. So particularly, so if you think about the deep pass ID pairing in the singular channel, it actually has this one and e to the I 2 pi over 3 to the I 4 pi over 3 phase factor. And the triplet pairing, the P plus I P pairing also has this one e to the I 2 pi over 3 and e to the I 4 pi over 3 phase winding. So 1 d. So these two different pairing channels actually have the same spatial distribution. So there's a possibility that we can mix the two. So if you really analyze the symmetry, this singular pairing breaks rotation, it breaks transversal and inversion symmetry, but So the spatial symmetry of the singlet and triplet pairing are the same. So if you multiply the two, there are symmetric and elastic symmetry operations, and they only break spin rotation symmetry. So if you also multiply that by the anti-ferromagnetic order parameter, you can write down a trilinear term that's symmetric under all the symmetry operations. You can check that if I consider time-reversal symmetry, these two terms were time-reversal symmetry, and this one is even on time-reversal, so the whole term is symmetric. Also, these two terms break spin rotation symmetry, but the take a dot product is a spin singlet. And also, these two breaks the charge U1 symmetry. So if I consider delta star, delta is also invariant under the charge U1 symmetry. So the whole term is allowed by all the symmetries. So this term should be present in the Hamiltonian principle. So in this sense, if there's an anti-ferromagnetic order, you'll automatically get a quadratic term that couples the triplet and the singlet pairing type. So in this way, you automatically get it's like getting a pairing term. So, and also we have a qualitative understanding why having an anti-ferromagnetic order would enhance the superconductivity. So this is because there's one problem. In general, if you have a Fermi surface, it's not surprising to get superconductivity once you have a lower in. So you just need a little bit of attractive interaction, and if your temperature is low enough, you always get superconductivity. But on the honeycomb knot, it's more difficult because at low temperature, so without any Fermi order, you only get the graph nodes, it's a semi metal, so there's no density state. So instead, you need finite strength of interaction to get superconductivity. But if you have an environment order at low temperature, the chemical potential will be near the bottom of the band. So you actually get a constant density state. So in that sense, the environment order actually increases the density state at low temperature, and that helps with the superconductivity. So, as I said before, we didn't really want to compete with the sophisticated tensor product numerical calculations, so we did some simple-banded calculation, but just calculating the superconducting susceptibility. So we start with a mean field Hamiltonian containing the anti-ferromagnetic order, and calculated the susceptibility of the superconducting order parameter. So if we assume that there's no magnetic order, we see there's some small susceptibility, it would take off at a lower temperature. But if we add the anti-ferromagnetic order, we see the superconductivity is the susceptibility of superconductivity order parameter is enhanced drastically at a lower temperature. So
This is TJ model, just a TJ model.
It's not even TJ model. So we didn't do a mutual calculation using TJ model. We just started with some
what is the interaction?
We just calculated the electron the susceptibility. We didn't put in any interaction
for free electron.
So it's like a free electron band structure, but with an anti-ferromagnetic background. You didn't do the full nuclear calculation.
It's fascinating because in GPS calculation, when you show that phase diagram, actually, any form of ordering and the pairing strings have no correlation. We show this phase diagram.
It
goes down to zero, the pairing, because of then you saturate quickly, right?
Right.
So actually, it's not correlated with this drop down of anti-ferromagnetic ordering parameter.
Right, but there's a quite sizable region of coexistence. So they do coexist. I think.
But both beyond the order phase, right? With the doping, the point one, we show that this time we're beginning of to promote the first, yeah, this inside, you see, you look at the order plan, the parameter, mm-hmm. which seems not correlated with this manipulation at all, right?
Yeah, so but this is still not normally what happens. So usually they compete.
Right.
Because
it's not competing here. It doesn't look like competing.
Right, that's our point. So because in usually other systems, they will compete because they compete for like density states. So here...
But also there's no enhancement, not much enhancement in the order phase, right? You see they almost flat the short line or the insect, yeah.
Right, so... Yeah, so in some sense, so this anti-paramagnetic order is killed by some other reasons because the doping is just so the anti-paramagnetic order is basically killed by the doping, and here the superconductivity is also killed by the lack of doping. So
right.
When
so
you go to hospital, there's no superconductivity.
So you can assume it's just. Oh, okay.
Right, so we're just saying that that they are they, so usually they will compete.
So you're saying actually, okay.
So here they do have a region, a large region of overlapping. So at least you see here. So once you get a size for doping, the superconductivity saturates even before the anti-magnetic order dies out.
Yeah.
That already means that they kind of help each other. So
I see. So because of the scale, you exclude the effect of the charge current increase, actually, the strains will be decreased.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Yeah. So at last, I want to talk about this topological phase transition. So here we have two dimensions.
Just one second, one instant. This is the PowerPoint. So the new order indeed open up the gap.
Right.
And but the gap really means reduction of density state at the zero energy.
That means so you have to fix the temporal potential, right? Because of by the doping level. So
oh, I see. So you assume there's doping.
Yeah. So
oh,
I'm saying at the assume if you fix the doping, then having the anti-paramagnetic
order increase. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Increase order,
oh,
increase.
I see. Yeah.
So here we are talking about a two-dimensional superconductor without any symmetry because we have a D plus ID and the P plus IP pairing, the imaginary part would break the temporal symmetry, and also the anti-paramagnetic order also breaks the temporal symmetry, and also the order parameter breaks rotation symmetry. So there is basically no symmetry at all in this system. So it is a two-dimensional system without any symmetry, and such systems are classified by the Chern numbers. So that's why we have a classification of topological superconductor in this case. So basically, the topological invariant is just that if you consider a weak coupling limit and use the probability for Jean Hamiltonian, so you just imagine that it's a Hamiltonian for probability quantum particles as a free fermion Hamiltonian and just calculate the Chern numbers. The Chern number would classify different topological superconductors. So here, instead of just go ahead and calculate the Chern number, we make a more intuitive argument. So by arguing that there's actually a topological phase transition in the phase diagram. So we know one necessary condition is that so if you want to change the topological invariant, you have to close the gap and reopen it. So that's because since different superconductors with the different Chern numbers are topologically distinct, you can't smoothly vary one to another without closing the superconducting gap. So here there is actually So there is actually a line where our superponent gap closes. That's because if you look at the parent symmetry, you'll see that so if you just work out the Fourier transform from this parent symmetry, this D plus ID parent has a node at one of the direct nodes. And this P plus ID triplet parent also has the same node at the same direct node. So in a semi metal, so you know in the band structure there are two direct nodes and the parent order primary is it brings symmetry, so it's asymmetric at the two nodes. So the parent order parameter has a node at one of the direct nodes. So when your chemical potential, so before you turn on superconductivity, if your chemical potential intersects with the Fermi surface, or if it's between the gaps, then it's fine. It doesn't matter if the pairing has a node exactly at this direct node, because here the chemical potential is not intersecting with the Fermi surface anyway. So the superconductor is still gapped everywhere. But when the chemical potential is exactly at the bottom of this upper band, then if the parent function has a node at this direct node, that means this whole superconducting system has a node. The quasi particle there is a nodal quasi particle excitation at this direct node. So when the chemical potential goes from this situation to that situation, when it intersects with the bottom of this upper band, there's actually the gap opens a node in the gap. So when this crossing happens, if you consider the spectrum of the local quasi particle, because this particle is symmetric, basically you have a quadratic band touching. So the two bands would touch each other and the superconducting gap reopens. So when this happens, because it's a quadratic band touching, we know the chain number will be changed by two. So there's a change of chain number. So that implies that at least one side of this, so that implies that it's a topological phase transition, and at least one side of the phase transition is a non-trivial topological superconductor. So this actually happens in the phase diagram. So exactly at the dashed line I was talking about. So let's say that so in this side, the chemical potential is within this antiferromagnetic gap, and in this region, the chemical potential is above this gap within the conducting band. So right at this dashed line, the chemical potential will intersect with the bottom of the upper band. That indicates the position of the topological phase transition. So it's without doing any calculation, it's easy to see that this case is actually a trivial superconductor. That's because you can imagine that you turn to a strong coupling limit by just blowing up this band. So this antiferromagnetic over band gap. So if you take a limit that this gap goes to infinity, basically all the electron excitations have infinite large energy, and this is basically a BEC limit. So you just turn the superconductor into a BEC limit where the Cooper pairs are all local. So this is clearly a trivial state. So that, and also we know that when this chemical potential crosses the bottom of the upper band, there's a logical phase transition where the chain number changed by two. That implies that on this side it's a logical superconductor. So this actually shouldn't be so surprising, because this is a Hamilton breaking P plus IP pairing superconductor, so it's a pair of logical superconductor. I'm here. So here's my conclusion. So we studied, we use some simple midfield theory to study the Hubbard model on the honeycomb lattice, and we show that it's a commensurate antiferromagnetic order in the finite doping. And on top of this antiferromagnetic order, if natural, because of the existence of anti-Brahmin order, then it becomes natural to have a mixture of spin singlet and spin triplet pairings as through connectivity. This is basically due to the special feature of the honeycomb market, such that these two different spin pairing channels with the opposite spin symmetry can have the same spatial symmetry. And we argue that this antiframing, the existence of this antiframing network can help the superconductivity because it provides more density state at the low temperature. And also, we show that in this phase diagram, there's a logical phase transition, and the superconducting state at finite doping at low temperature is a logical superconducting.
I'm a little confused by your use of the terms P plus IP and P plus ID, because surely you need to, if you're going to talk about the symmetry of your states, you need to talk about the symmetry under the symmetry operations of the lattice. In this case, these are, I guess, rotations through 60 degrees or something like that.
Right, I totally agree. I was just using that because it's used in the literature, but it's not a precise name for. So because here we only have like 3-4 rotations each with respect to the side, so we really can't call them P plus ID and P plus ID. So we should use some symmetry representation of the lattice symmetry group, I think. But I think people use D plus ID and P plus ID because they are more intuitive.
You've only got three possible orientations.
Right.
So it's entirely clear that you have room for three states. There.
Yeah,
I
really shouldn't call them P plus. The precise meaning of the pairing symmetry is like the phase changes by 2 pi over 3 when you rotate the system by 140 degrees.
But then isn't D plus ID equivalent to P minus ID?
That
distinction.
D is a singlet, but the P minus I P is triplet. So the spin part is different.
So you have respect to plaquette, you have 60 degree rotation.
Sure.
So under that rotation, can you distinguish P and D?
The two pairing symmetries, they have exactly the same spatial symmetry. So if you multiply them together, it doesn't break any lattice symmetry. So in that sense, the income is great inversion. The spatial part is exactly the same.
Yeah, I think the point is that the orbit part of the cancer.
So neither of them are precise names because D and P with the representation of a continuous rotation group. So it never exists in any lattice system. So it really shouldn't be. So strictly speaking, it shouldn't be used anywhere when you have a lattice. I think it's just a more convenient with no notation.
But on a square like this, for example, you can choose
right.
Dx squared and V squared or
right.
Dx,
right?
Definitely.
Right. So here it is
no B1, B2,
and more complicated.
So here I have no B representation and A representation.
Right.
So
it's
A2G. So this is A2.
But those representation of the triangular lattice symmetry group is more complicated. So I don't think it's why they're using the anyway, the mathematical is just the phase one fine each of the 2 power 3 representation. That completely determines the spatial symmetry.
There's one more topological superconductivity, so just a long back. You can take an antiferromagnetic order and create a Skirnaya, for example, a topological object. Then it will trap two mid-gap states. And then you can put two electrons there in a single state, or both. So that will be like, also like a Cooper pair. So, but the binding comes because you have a Skirnaya complex. Early in the game, Paul Wigman talked about it. So you can have but I think it's beyond the mean field.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Skinner condition.
Condensation.
Yeah, probably this TTS calculation does not really imply this Skinner condition because the density is very small, close to half field, and when you increase the superconductivity, it's actually kind of suppressed. When you increase the current,
so you can view it in terms of Skinner,
right?
Charge
Skinner. Maybe we can check whether this the summation of these two density is some approximately conductive.
Yeah, I have two questions. One is so the super and other parameter have a nodal point at the bottom of the band, right?
So there are two direct nodes. So that if you consider the band chart, there are two. So in the semi-metal level, there are two direct nodes. So when you have open up an experiment order, there are two bottoms. So
two bottoms, yeah.
It has a node at one of the.
I see. No node in other. I see. And also, in this mean field calculation, whether one can identify some kind of interaction so that within mean field theory, we induce this kind of superconductivity.
Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. So, if you take, we could take a TJ model and do the mean field calculation. See.
I mean, whether this superconductivity is driven by a magnetic fluctuation or some. You need some additional thing. I wonder. So at the mean field level, you have free electron, you have no superconductivity. But with some additional interaction, you may drive to this one.
Right.
But what kind of interaction? Whether there's an understanding from this point of view?
Yeah, I think if we want to do a mean field theory, the simplest thing to do is to add a Hertzberg interaction, which can be composited into superconducting channel.
So spin has. Super exchange probably,
right?
I'm already get that.
Yeah. We're kind of lazy to do that because there is already other more advanced numerical results. So even if we do some mean-field calculation, we will be able to fix that.
Yeah, I think I get the point is it's a trilinear term, kind of the three order kind of perfect equations.
But if you add a simple Hubbard interaction, it seems to stabilize mostly D plus IT. The range of do variation Monte Carlo.
I think if you have an inframag order and the D plus ID pairing, that automatically implies you have a triplet pairing just by the symmetry argument. Because the symmetry is already broken, so in fact, you will have a finite amount of triplet pairing as well.
But you know, what I'm mentioning is about you, not very large.
Right.
Suppose you take an intermediate view.
Right.
Then you don't stabilize antiferromagnetism for a large range of. Because it turns out for honeycomb lattice, for small u, you don't develop antiferromagnetic arc.
Right.
Because the density of change vanishes.
Yes.
So for those intermediate range of u, right from the beginning, according to variational calculations and other, it seems to stabilize D plus ID over a range of tau.
Right. Right. That's kind of an example of this Hubbard interaction with the do not favor the Asper pairing, but do not have the partial favor this.
Right, yeah, that's one way.
Yeah. Yeah, but as I said, we have to use rational Monte Carlo because if we do a simple mean field calculation, the Hubbard interaction doesn't contain.
Right.
The,
but you put by hand, as you said, just start attracting action.
Right. So we didn't want to do some regression on how to compete with the tensor protection.
Is this some kind of swing back feature where you have order when you put over here? You dope it with a swing back.
I think what we were doing is even simpler than that.
Yeah, well, no, I know, but you have to consider once you have a magnetization, you also polarize, you change the Fermi point, your point to the wrong line.
Right.
So the normal case, you will have competing for two things, one is the order, one is the pairing.
Right.
So you have both self-consistent.
Right. So I think on the simplest level, so we include some of the effects because So we have an environment order that we normalize the band structure that changes the density state, but we certainly don't, we didn't include any effect of spin fluctuation. We just have a mean field prediction.
Right.
There's no other questions. Let's just thank all the speakers this time.